Elmo's gonna keep skis right here under his wing. Machine's gonna thrive starting in the spring. Elmo's gonna keep Muskies cozy and warm.
Welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast, Jay Bird.
Stevie.
What you doozing?
Riding out winter, baby.
Yeah,
it's been like snowing and sleeting for like 5 days in a row.
Wonderful.
You just cold and windy. Ugh.
If you live in Wisconsin, you deserve anything you chose. I know, dude. Last week I think you said it was like 40 and it was warm here, and today my favorite combo, 30 and 30. You got 30 mile an hour winds and 30 degrees. That was exciting. So felt like I rode the old freaking ice sled around the lake. Nasty stuff. I'm sick of it. I'm sure we're gonna turn the corner. What does it look like, Jay? There kind of extended there for you here very shortly. You're gonna turn the corner. Is March gonna be smarch? Is it just gonna be
yeah, the long range this week is supposed to be just like highs in the 20s, I guess. So nothing too good looking.
Well, hopefully we're out of it here shortly. So
won't be long.
Other than that, our timing couldn't be better, Jay.
How's that?
You know, we got the comings and goings at the Muskie shop, and of course we got a new hockey jersey. I don't know if you watched what happened today to our northern friends there, but
right.
Put that one in your pipe and smoke it there, boys. So
shoot the puck,
The puck. Yet again, we beat yet again, we beat communists for a gold medal.
Oh, you're going to get some hate on that one, man.
I'm teasing.
I know you are. I'm just teasing.
Slow it down there, beaver folk. Don't get too mad. Anyway, God.
But now, we really do have a new hockey jersey. Yeah, it's really kind of BA. It looks really good.
Yeah. Got that freaking. No, the last one, we've rocked them around there a little bit. So now we got a black jersey there. Got the. What is this? There's like a tumbler. If you need Muskie Shop Chotskis, boy, do we have you. So you got a new tumbler, the new Draken, and the Genesis. So, guys, those just rolled in. I know we'd kind of mentioned that. Some people had asked in regards to the Swivlo showing up. Right. So the Swivlos are back in. And then the Draken is the bass size reel.
Correct.
Because we have the kind of the import deal with Swivlo in the U.S. right now. So if you're a bass guy, you can actually get your hands on the Swivlo deal there. And, you know, I mean, if you're having problems with 80-pound braid, this is going to help you with that 10, 15-pound stuff just as much.
Oh,
so.
Darn right. Yeah. We had a lot of people asking about that Draken. So, yeah, finally got them in. It took a while.
Yeah, they're cool. I had them a hot minute ago, the samples. If it's not like a 400-size bait caster, I can't use it. But when I fooled around with them, I didn't spend any time on the water with the Drakens. But, you know, of course, had to go see if I could bird's nest it, and I couldn't. Which I can bird's nest any bass size reel instantly, Jay. Just from
throwing that's what they're designed
reels.
For.
Yeah. Well, it's either for the guy, if you're a musky guy that can't throw a bass reel, that's good. Or if you just can't throw a bass reel, so that's kind of cool, handy. And again, on that front, if you have wives, girlfriends, your girlfriend's uncle, your wife's girlfriend and her uncle, whatever, whoever's on the boat with you, these are handy to have. I actually keep a couple of the Genesis just in case you get the anointed ones, Jay, on the boat.
Yeah, it's a great option if you want to pick backlashes out of your buddy or your friend's reel.
You get old Billy Bird's Nest on the boat there with you. Oh, why don't you take Cousin Timmy out after Thanksgiving? Right. Frick, and he's sitting there in the floor eating crayons, picking his nose, and now you got
eating crayons.
You know, now you, so that, yeah, that's worth having around on that front, but that works. And then, other than that, did get word, I believe, because the email is blowed up, Jay, straight blowed up on a couple of the new baits. You got the Menace, you got the Critter, and you got the Banshee. Not dropping one, not dropping two. It's a triple album, Jay.
It's a triple drop.
It's a triple drop. So that is happening, I believe. Jay and I talked about it. We're watching. Jay, how intently are you watching the package? So stare. No, it's moving here. It's coming along, and... we're hoping what, Jay? Don't tell anybody. This is for podcast folks only. But what were we thinking? Probably like, what did we say? I'm thinking week after next. It's looking
yeah, like we're so. Thinking about a week, a little like over a week, yeah, where we should have them in stock. So it'll still be February in a week. So well, no, or will it?
No.
No, it won't.
I'm looking at my calendar. It's the freaking 28th. February is that 28 day month. So it's looking like the 3rd. We're thinking, maybe. We'll see. Yeah. Should be. Don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. Keep it quiet. Secret. Keep it safe.
On the download.
On the DL. Just there. Just this stays between you and Uncle Jay.
Okay. Don't tell anybody, Steve. I got you.
Worst sleepover of my life. Oh, what we got going on other than that? I was going to tell you. I'm going to try to get a hold of Smitty here in a second. But, you know,
little Smitty
over the winter, I tried to have my smidgens of pontification. And something I wanted to lay on you is a couple things as far as bites, right? So something that you run into, and it's a bite that I'm kind of in right now. And you have these hard transitions. And hold on, let me set that down. I was talking to Rick Klein earlier this week. So we got the Bassmaster Classic coming up. Oh, God. Let me look at my schedule. Sucks. Okay. Like in 2 weeks, the Bassmaster Classic is happening. Fortunately, it's in Knoxville. So it's on my home turf this year, Jay. So I don't have to fool around, which is lovely.
I did not know that. Okay. Yeah, that's cool.
Which is great. If you're, let me say this. If you're in that area, A, you could come and you be the only muskie angler at the entire thing. There's that. But I've never, ever, ever, ever have I ever seen more crap for sale in one place. Like, it is intense, Jay. It
is, a lot of knickknacks, or
no,
what are we talking about?
No, it is booth, multiple stories of vendors. I mean, you walk in and it is thousands upon thousands of people and an endless sea of booths. It's ridiculous. I mean, you can buy anything and everything. Obviously, it's bass-centric, but if you were in the neck of the woods and like needed a deal on electronics, everybody's always asking about electronics, I would be looking there because, dude, you roll up on like Saturday in the afternoon and people want to get rid of stuff. I mean, Jay, from kayaks to freaking brand new boats to there's people there selling bass rods, buy one, get five and crap like that. So just on the consumerism front, that's an interesting tidbit for you if you're anywhere near it. It's
quite the spectacle.
Oh, it is. It gets me right there in the public panic attack every time I have to go to one of those things. There's so many people. I mean, we're talking like your sea of people, but... The deals and the steals, Jay, are pretty cool. But yeah, Livingston will be there, so I have to go there, and no one will care. Oh, there's somebody dumb enough to fish for muskies. Who cares?
Where are they having the tournament? On what kind of water? A river system, obviously, I would guess.
It's Tennessee River.
Tennessee River, I believe, okay.
Which is basically, that comes out of down. They'll launch out of downtown Knoxville, because Knoxville, the river runs right through town, right by the University of Tennessee. If you ever watch UT playing on television, they'll show the whatever the heckin' people on their boats. I think they call it like the UT Navy or whatever. It's stupid, right? And then bunch of people that didn't go to school there. So let's not mince words, but So the river runs right through, and I want to say that it's whatever's connected, which is like Fort Loudoun and Tellico, I believe. I don't fish for bass, so if it doesn't have muskies, I don't care. But that's the deal. So it's that wasn't the point what I brought up per se, but if you're in that region, it's worth seeing because it's crazy. I mean, it's like it makes ICAST look like a joke. Right. And ICAST is industry only, but even being at ICAST and stuff, it's like, oh, it's cool. But this is like pretty, pretty intense. But what I was getting at is talking to Rick, and we're just kind of shooting the shit about this, that, and the other, and just kind of have a discussion about the weather, right? What do old guys do, Jay? We talk about the weather, right? So I'm talking to Klun. How's it been over there? And how's it been over here? And we're talking and talking and talking. Long story short, it has been cold water for everybody, right? They had a couple bass tournaments over the last couple weeks. Those guys have been like, okay, this is the coldest water these pros have ever fished. What happened and what is happening is basically the water temp is becoming a nil factor in some of these scenarios, which I find interesting. It runs contradictory to what one would think. But fish are transitioning shallow. We're off, Jay, by, in some places, 10 degrees, what we should be temperature-wise, right?
Seasonally. Very substantial. Right,
very substantial. But it's interesting to see this shallow push. And it's one of those things where we talk about photo period, right? The number one thing that will help move fish and kind of determine seasonality is length of day. Right now, obviously, the longer the day, the more warming period you have. But I don't have like a definitive, like, this is the why. But even the pro bass guys are like, these things you would think one would want to come out with that knee jerk reaction, Jay, where you go, okay, I'm fishing ledges and edges, right? You're fishing something like a Howard Deep or a KVD super crank, you know, whatever, it's bass talk, but you're fishing like super deep, right? There are bites that will happen that are shallow where these fish just are coming up, and it's not like there's a substantial warm up and things of that nature. It's almost one of those interesting points in time where you go, this is what they do, right? And it's something worth keeping in mind when you're muskie patterning, where there is, you know, this overarching rule. You hear us beat it: this, and this, and weather is all right. Weather trumps everything. But you got to consider photo period, where there are misnomers, where the fish are just going to stage where they're going to stage. You might not be able to put your finger on it, and they break the rules. That's what keeps it interesting, right? That's what keeps fishing on your toes.
Yeah, because, right. It does, right.
I mean, think about it. If you took the collective knowledge of, you know, enough of the right guys, you go, well, you would never miss. You should not. You see what I'm saying? Like, if you, like, hive-minded everybody and their thoughts, you would never miss, which is untrue, because there are things that just happen. It's kind of been interesting. You know, I've been on, Jay, crazy as it is, I'll tell you what I've been doing, which is super shad wraps and jointed X wraps and banshees up shallower than crap. 43 degree water makes no sense, but it is what it is, right? I don't know why. And a lot of people, like the bass anglers, are not. No one, other than the answer I got from Klun is, well, that's what they want to do. And that's why I bring it up, right? Because I'm talking to Rick Klun. Nobody pays, literally, nobody knows more. And, you know, you have access to a guy like that. And that, like, I got my 5 seconds to kind of ask. And he was like, well, that's what they want to do. And there's no answer. He's seeing the same thing. But it's interesting to keep in mind, you know, that dialed in stuff. But, you know, for myself, and I know some the bass guys that I know that are on those tours and doing that, which is you dial in on your pattern, you always have your thought process, but you need to always allot time to do something that runs counter to what you think you should be doing. Right? Because as dialed in as you think you are, there are multiple patterns happening. So just worth noting there. Put that in your thinking pipe and smoke it. You know what I'm saying? Just keep it mixed up. And for me, you know, looking at patterning from every which way and every angle. And obviously there's a biological reason, you know. Personally, I think the most logical one being, well, the length of the day is dictating, and this is kind of what they want to do. But majority of population can break what we think are rules. And those rules are just what, you know, the rules we try to apply are just that. We're trying to kind of set parameters for what they'll do, and they're going to do what they're going to do. And so you always got to keep an eye on that. Anyway, speaking of they're going to do what they're going to do, like murdering people at trade shows or running illegal food stands in the North Woods. Let's try to get a hold of Jake Smith. What do you say, Jay?
Yeah.
All right, guys. We've got Jake from Smitty Bates. What are you doing, Jake?
Oh, just enjoying the winter weather and did a little outdoor activity today with my son. We're sledding and we didn't fish today, but then he wanted to do some snowmobiling, so we did some of that. And he's become quite the defensive driver on the snowmobile. He tries to pinch me off when we're on a trail or something. He doesn't want me to pass him. It's crazy.
That's awesome, man. Well,
yeah,
we're not too far off on season, though. You know, every week, usually I call Jay, and you can just hear that barrel of that 38 in his mouth. I'm like, Jay, it's time for the podcast. And he begrudgingly puts it down and does the show for another week. It's just one more week, Jay. Just hold on. Just hold on.
It was nice. We had a little tease of the warm weather about a week ago or whatever. It was pretty
sure
nice.
It was.
Yeah.
But now it's back to winter right now. But it's getting there. It's almost March. So, I mean, it's got to thaw one of these days.
Yeah, well, you guys, of all things, and it sounds silly, but you guys needed it. You needed the snow and needed the snowmobilers and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Yeah. You know, yeah. So, well, how's the shows been going, Jake?
Pretty good. We've been doing a few of them. We were down in Schaumburg, and that was a busy show, but, you know, that's not a musky show, so we sold a lot of our smaller baits, you know, the Wizards, and we make a bass bait that you probably, maybe you've seen, but Musky Shop doesn't carry it, but it's, you know, a 5-inch or 4-inch bass bait, 6-inch bass bait. We sold a ton of pile of them down there and booked a few trips, and then we went to Milwaukee. Milwaukee was seemed like a lighter crowd, but people were buying, so good. It was definitely worth being there.
Absolutely.
Got to see a bunch of, you know, people that come every single year and catch up with them, so it was good.
Yeah, well, that's good. You know, do you have any custom colors? Did you introduce like perch or something extreme this year?
Oh, yeah.
Perch, I should know.
Perch.
No, you got Smitty's are a staple. And if you go to the shows, make sure to, you know, ask Jake. Just look him dead in the face and say, what'll 20 get me? Wink, wink, right? And you wink at him, but you got to wink with your left eye. He'll know what you're talking about. You'll get $20 worth.
They're under the counter. We had a few guys asking for them.
Oh, yeah. the old ether rag. So.
No, they were looking for shanks.
Shanks. Your dad's back. Now, they're made the old-fashioned way. Most people would use tools to make this. The Smitties do it the artisanal way and grind them on the concrete floor. So.
They're looking for shanks, he says.
Somebody just get lit. Can you imagine, Jay, just somebody just getting lit up in the liver in the men's room at the Schaumburg fishing show? Just right there.
Yeah.
Stabbed him 36 times in the pancreas.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of materials to work with. You got to use whatever you got.
Yeah, exactly. That was before the Smitty, the notorious prison gang, the Smitty Bait Company. So, listen, just walk up to Jake and say, what set are you rocking? Right? Just what crew are you with? Oh, God. Well, other than that, man, thanks for coming on. Good night. I'm teasing.
All right.
I wanted to ask, because you guys have been doing some cool stuff. You know, it's funny. I mentioned you've got a bunch of cool products. And what I've always liked about Smitty, you guys are kind of like, in my mind, the quintessential grassroots bait company, right? And I mean that in a superbly positive. It's such a family endeavor and just boots on the ground stuff. What are you developing or what's going on? You know, I know you've got a lot of cool products, so I wanted to give you a second to kind of brag up what you're working on.
Well, I do have a few new baits that they're not on the market yet, but, and I don't know if I want to talk too much about them, but one I can, and it's an old bait, but I'm bringing it back. I haven't talked to you about it yet, Jay, even, but it's the Python. Remember the Pythons?
Crankbait, right?
Pythons. Yeah, crankbait, metal lip.
Yeah, kind of.
So I've had a lot of guys asking about, you know, we made that in, I think, four sizes. My dad did back in the 90s, I would say. But I made one, and I fished with it, and I put the weight kit in it.
Oh, very cool.
You know, there's not a lot of crankbaits with the adjustable weight kit in it. So it's a shallow diver, and we're just coming out with the 7-inch just to
feel like size.
It's kind of the perfect size. We made a 5-inch, a 7-inch, I think a 9 and a 12 or something, but we're just going to do the 7 and see how it goes and see how people, how it goes over. And if it does, we may do the other sizes too, but
yeah, that's
it's pretty cool. Pretty cool little bait. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I remember, I can't see it in my head, but I remember you had them, you know, and
it's got pikey minnow style lift on it.
Is flat, it, you know, jointed or bait. Solid?
Straight, solid bait.
Heck yeah. So,
yeah,
you know, it's crazy. I mean, I think, you know, it's so cool that you guys have so much innovation and so much stuff you guys have done over the years that you can go back to stuff you stopped making and make it again, you know, which is,
you take stuff out because it's maybe not selling well or there's other stuff on the market, but if you could bring it back and change a little bit and make it, you know, more versatile and people still want them, get asking about them, so... We'll see what happens.
Yeah. No, it's cool because
there,
you know, I appreciate one reason, like I say, heck guys, the way it works to be a guest on this show, I just text you like an hour ahead of time. That's what I do with Jake. And I was just thinking, you know, I was like, I need to have Jake on because it's been a minute, but that thought of at least to highlight it for everybody, because, you know, we're going through, and Jake, I know you're superbly aware of, you know, all the industry changes and all this stuff and all that, but you go, well, the Smitties have been doing it this way for a long time, and it's not going to change, you know? And I think that's important. It's such a, you know, unless you've sold out. Were you guys purchased by Amazon this week or something?
Haven't sold to any huge companies.
Not yet.
For the right dollar, I mean, it's possible.
Right. Then what are people going to do? What people just be pulling their hair out because it's like... You look at it, you guys have pumped out some stuff, like especially like the grappler, you know, I know there's freaking guys like your classic flap and the grappler where it's just like, you know, if you stop making those, I know about 10 dudes are going to just freaking come hunt you down. You know?
I mean, yeah, the original flap tail is it's a subtle topwater where now nothing against the other flap tails on the market, but they're not subtle. They're, you know, they make a lot more noise there, which is good. I mean, they're good too, but it's the little flap tail is something that it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be quiet and slow and it's a reasonably priced bait compared to some of the other flap tails on the market. And the other thing is I'm not a huge fan of the spreader hooks. I kind of, on that size bait, like, you don't really miss a lot of fish with it. You don't catch a ton of weeds. You don't hook fish in the eyes or gills.
More spreader bars. And I love when I'm running a flap tail, which is, I always look at it, maybe, I don't know what your application is, but I'm like, okay, I've had that sneaky fish in shallow water where I need to just run kind of ultra slow and ultra just that creaking and ting, ting, you know, warm water, it seems to work where it's just that super slow, just really, you know, I don't know. I mean, yeah. You see it in your head because, like, you've had, you know, like, you've moved it twice on blades or something, or it came up hot on a top water like a tail prop or something like that, and you just know. You know, after you've done this long enough, you're not going to get that raging follow twice. You know, they tend to lose a little bit of chutzpah, if you will, on that follow up.
I use it for that a lot. You, like you mentioned that you raised earlier, mm-hmm. you know, and it didn't eat. Go back and just tick that thing through their soul slowly. You know, the fish is in the area, so you're not worried about covering a lot of water. It's not a search bait, obviously, but.
I think a lot of this stuff with the modern take on flaptails, they're trying to use it as a search bait or as like a pseudo tail prop, you know, churning bait. Where
yeah.
I think when I'm thinking flaptail or that kind of, I'm thinking like a step slower than a creeper. You know, it's like how slow can we get it?
It's a different tool, and that's saying that those other baits that are on the market, they obviously are catching a lot of fish with them, and it's just a different tool.
Right, so. just a different concept and application. Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, when you say that on the spreader bars, because I have, you know, you've been kind enough, I got grapples. I think when it comes to those baits, I hate storing those things, right? It's like... Alabama rigs and flaptails. I can go the rest of my life and not have to screw with them. But with your classic flaptail, however, I mean, I've never had a problem with hookup ratio. Have you? Like, I know, I mean, if they hit it, they freaking hit it and they get it.
I've had fish hit at the tail, but I mean, right. I think a lot of times those might be smaller fish or pike even, or mm-hmm. bass. I mean.
Right, it's what we tell ourselves. Yep.
Yeah.
Right. Every time it was a pike. Moving on.
Yeah,
sir, that was a really large pike.
That's what the clients usually say. Oh, it was just a pike.
Oh, absolutely. No, you go. No, I saw them. Refraction's a hell of a thing. Your polarized sucked. It was a 47. I've done my job. You say that every time. You can write if you need me to say it again, Jake. Write it down. Right. You go. Nope. Upper 40s.
Yeah.
I saw it with my O2 eyes. Yeah, that's, I mean, do you see, obviously I'm asking you because you make them both, right? So I can pick on the subject because it's not comparing one or the other. Like with the grapple, with the spreader bars, and I'm not saying I don't like it. I'm trying to avoid weed fouling in kind of some of the areas I'm fishing. Where do you see the spreader bar as an advantage, or is it just you put the spreader bar on there because that's the expectation of the market demand?
Yeah, it's that. It's both. But yeah. I mean, there are situations where you maybe do have fish at certain times of year that are nipping just at the tail. So then, mm-hmm. if you had a fish, you know, when you maybe missed one, well, then you could put this is the time that I need to put the extra hooks mm-hmm. out there. So,
gotcha.
And sometimes it is like that.
It is what it be, but it do.
Yeah.
So that's what they say. Like I said, it's just a different ball game. But yeah, that's one of the favorites there. But let's get into the actionable stuff here. And I thought of it just as an aside there, real quick. I did think of MS Text here earlier for like the 400th time. I was asked what file I use. It's the Smitty file, folks. Somebody texted her this week, but yeah, enough talking about Smitty baits. Let's get to the tactics here and just kind of get down to it. What tell me about last season. What did you learn?
It was I took on a couple new lakes if I learned anything. Mm-hmm. And I try to do that every year, is just explore and mm-hmm. what worked, you know, it's crazy how it is your best lake 1 year can be totally off the next year, and you go and you get a day off to explore and go back to a lake that you fished a couple years ago and it's just on.
That's because you're supposed to let them go, Jake. Don't take them home. Yeah, that won't happen anymore.
They seem too many Smitty baits. Maybe that's what it was, too.
They're just like, I'm screwed.
That's all you throw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, do you think, to that point, and if you guys don't know, I did, Jake, this is second generation Northwoods, that, you know, Eagle River, Conover, St. Germain, you know, you guys are staples there. And so many people are planning those trips. That's the main reason I want to call you, because, you know, you look at that point you just said, jokingly, they're seeing so many Smitty baits. Do you feel, what do you feel like the conditioning level is in the Northwoods for real? Like heavy?
I think it's pretty high, especially the last, you know, 5 years. And man, even last year, I think there was more musky fishermen than I've seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
More and more every year. And that's a good thing. I mean, we want more people in the sport, but it can be a little annoying.
But not on the water, right? We want you in the sport buying baits, but don't come. Don't you dare come to the lake.
Or hire a guide.
but don't bring the baits you bought on the boat. Don't bring that.
Finding some of the off-beaten lakes is what I've always go to when I like to hit some of the higher pressured lakes early in the year, and then mm-hmm. I'll try to hit some things this summertime off the high pressured little lakes around here and other bites that are going on. But
mm-hmm. When you're fishing some of this Northwoods stuff, you know, I mean, I know you listen to the show on occasion here, we're always harping on the bucktails and blades, but I know you see that rain down continually, right? It's raining bucktails. Hallelujah. But what are you, I know you're pretty heavy in jerk baits. What are some of your go-to tactics? Obviously your baits, but what's some of your go-to stuff to beat that pressure? If it's on the same water that you're on, or it's like, hey, it's been a high pressure week, what are you doing?
Yeah. Jerk baits, stop and go baits. Staying away from, I catch a lot of fish on blades, but mm-hmm. And if you have three guys in the boat, usually have one throwing it. But the high pressured lakes, stop and go, and then even crankbaits. Mm-hmm. Or join a deep diver. If it's summertime, I want to get on the deeper weed edges, the join a deep diver that we make.
Mm-hmm.
I rip and pull it. And that seems to help. You know, most... I guess it's common to see somebody just wind a crankbait in, right?
Right.
Not a lot of people are jerking them, and it seems to get them going and get them the bite.
There's something to be said there, which is, you know, in the basic skills primer, having that down, because not every, when you look at, say, whether like tracer tail, right? You know, I've always been a fan of that jerkbait, you know, I don't care what you're throwing. If it's not a bucktail, it can't be straight retrieve. It can be, but to break that up, I mean, I get what you're saying, because I think the curse so often with folks, I mean, if you look at it, Booker made a career out of telling people to slackline twitch a shallow raider for 30 years, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not picking on Joe, but I'm going, the amount of people like that was revelatory. Whoa, right? Wow. Because 99% of the other people in the water, they treat every crankbait, everything is a straight retrieve bait. It's just
straight,
like,
retrieving.
It's like, it or works, just, but...
Or, yeah.
But...
Do you see that in the vault, like, on a daily basis, Jake, where you're like, here's how you retrieve this? You know, you have to tell them to retrieve differently?
Oh, yeah. I mean, most commonly, yeah, you have to tell people... you know, how to work the bait and how the fish want it at that time. And usually everybody just want to wind it in. And then you got to remind them, no, we got to jerk it, you know, or vary the speed, you know, crank fast and then slow it up, let it kind of rise up a little, crank fast. I do that a lot with the short tail tracer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, crank it fast, then just kind of let it rise up, crank it fast. Like, you're not even jerking it. You're just, you know, varying the speed of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's our job to be a coach and to tell them, you know, recommend them how to use the baits.
I thought we were just supposed to loom over them like snidely.
Just yell at him.
Yell at him. What are you doing wrong?
Just yell all day.
Just yell all day and then steal their fish. Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the reason they want to hire you is to be yelled at, for sure.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely. They're not getting enough of that shit at home. I want to be yelled at. And then I want to be yelled at, and then I want to watch you catch one. I want you to just snipe one that came in on an 8, and I want to be yelled at. Yes.
Hiring you for a beatdown.
Beatdown God service. It's just the logo. The logo is just a fat, downtrodden man crying. So, I think a lot of that, you know, from that perspective, though, is. You know, from the guide viewpoint, yeah, you got to stay on people to keep it broken up. I mean, it's you get in that trance, Jay and Jake. I mean, you just get in that trance of throw and go. You know, whether it be swim baits. I mean, basically, I tell my people, if it's not a bucktail, a spinnerbait, or a topwater, you better be doing something with it. For the vast majority of the time, unless we're like. There's sometimes we're fishing like crazy cold water. Okay, slow, you know, but you've got to mix it up. I mean, as far as that early season, say somebody's kind of thinking about Northwoods early season. What's that? I mean, the premise of the question being, when's the best bite but the best time to avoid pressure? Is it early season? Is it late season? What's kind of the on the water read there?
Yeah, I mean, I think early season right away. They haven't seen a lot of baits yet. I mean, they've maybe, not that they've forgotten it.
Their memories of little not less like clear. It. Yeah.
It seems like it right away that, you know, they're ready to feed, and they haven't seen a bait for 6 months or whatever it's been. Mm-hmm. Well, for sure early. I mean, I love the early June fishing. It's so good around here. It's high, you know, high numbers of fish.
Mm-hmm.
And, sometimes nice size fish, but definitely high numbers, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And get so many follows that time of year too, which keeps you going.
Right, right. It's not a drag. Let me ask you this. I know it's hot button, but what's kind of your vibe on the new openers without getting into the craziest of it? You got to live through it. It's why I asked. And if you don't want to comment, you don't have to, but.
Yeah. No, I'll say what I wasn't in favor of it. I just think the fish are pressured enough. The stocking is getting less and less every year, and now we're gonna go out there and catch them and stress them out more than they already are. And people say that they don't feed at that time of the year, but that's not true, because I've caught them walleye fishing, and I've caught a 47 incher a couple years ago and pulled it in the boat. Like, I mean, he got on hook the thing, and eggs were dumping all over the bottom of my boat. So
yeah,
I'd rather have the eggs in the lake than the bottom of my boat.
Right.
So I'm booked up for walleye fishing for the first, you know, all May pretty much anyway. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to be doing it. But I mean, if we did have a warm spring and things were going to go and they're done spawning, and you go to lakes where it's warmer lakes, and you're not chasing, snagging them, that's the other thing. There is going to be fish being kept, and by, you know, crappie fishermen, and because they do eat small baits in the spring, and they're all crappie fishing, and they hook a muskie on a beetle spin or whatever, and hey, look at the meat on this thing. It's open season, because I don't know why they made it that it's not a catch and release season. It's an open season for some reason.
Right, right. I agree.
Interesting.
And it's been catch and release. Yeah. Just to clarify for anybody listening, it's not really sure what's going on.
Nobody's
here, what we're talking
listening,
about,
by the way.
This
is just
it's just between us.
I've not even been recording.
Well, I'll tell Steve.
Yeah. Oh, you got
great.
Great.
Yeah. Northern Wisconsin's opening, 4 weeks earlier than normal, than ever?
Yeah.
So that's what we're talking about here. It's extremely early kill season for muskies, so it is what it is.
Yeah.
We'll raise a little controversy.
Yeah, big time, but we'll see what happens. And I, you know, it all started with the what you call busky fishing or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, that in a couple, I don't know, it's been 6 years ago or 8 years ago, whatever it is, they opened up catch and release bass fishing, which mm-hmm. never was a thing before. And now that's really what got it going, because there right. were people going out busky fishing, as yeah. you call it, or whatever. And so, I mean, it's really hard to regulate. How could you regulate it?
It's,
so I see both yeah. sides. I understand both sides of it. And
I mean, that's
what's going on. But
that's one of those things that you know, where I'm downsizing tactically, but you see so often, like here, I mean, especially when these things are pushed up stupid show, it's every bass guy in the world. You know, I didn't realize they'd open the bass up there. When did they open that up?
Yeah, it's got to be close to 10 years ago, right, Jay? That they started the largemouth early. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Several years ago, for sure. Yeah, where
in between 6 and 10 years ago. Yeah, something gotcha. Like that.
Interesting. Well, it's one of those things. You know, you look at what we shall see. You know, we'll figure out. We'll know the impact when it's either everything's okay or it's too late. It's just the way that works. But wait. Moving on from that little chestnut. You're saying the early season's the best. What kind of, you know, for the people that are playing their Northwoodsy funds right now, when do you think that is, like the first couple of weeks of June? When does it get juicy, you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's different. It's a hard question, because it's every year is, you know, different depending on the winter. Like the couple warm winters we've had here, it started a lot earlier than it normally would. But this is looking more, I mean, you can't predict what's going to happen, but it looks like we're probably going to have a little bit later or average open water
mm-hmm.
this year. So I would say the first week of June and second week of June.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't go wrong. The whole month is always is a good month to be mm-hmm. to be out. So
yeah, well,
it's one of my favorite times.
Well, if we have a thermonuclear war with Iran, do you think it'll take the ice off earlier? Or will be the same?
Oh, yeah, that should help.
that'll warm it up. Just water around there. Well, let's keep picking. I want to keep picking your brain here. So we got kind of, you know, you got the opener stuff. Tactically, you're trying to beat the pressure with some jerks. You're trying to stand out from that. What are you doing in kind of that July, August, that doldrums area? You know, because that's pretty heavy tourist. A lot of people, you know, kids are out of school. You know, your girlfriend's out of jail. You can go to the Northwoods for the weekend. What kind of that July, August bite look like?
If you can avoid the middle of the day, that's the biggest thing, is not being out there at high noon in July. And
mm-hmm.
you either get up early and fish in the morning. I do that with some of my clients, or we'll do a split day and,
mm-hmm.
you know, fish from 5 to 9 in the morning and 6 to 10 in the evening or something like that, you know, where you're not out, you're fishing at prime times at least. And that mm-hmm. seems to help a lot. And, if you are going to be out during, you know, the middle of the day, you get off the weed lines, you know, get out a little bit deeper, that seems to be where they're at. They do come in toward the evenings. They do come back into the shallows, it seems, though. So
now when you're getting out, say on that outside weed bite, right, what are you fishing? What's kind of your strategy or lure selection there?
Well, that is a time when I will throw a bucktail, and I throw the rustler
uh-huh.
bucktail. And that's bait that we can get down deeper,
because
uh-huh. it's got the lead body on it, mm-hmm. And the big number 9 blade on it. That's a weighted, you know, thicker blade, so it gets down a lot deeper. And throw it and slow roll it is a really good tactic for us. And then I talked about earlier the joint deep diver that we make.
Uh-huh.
That gets down, you know, it'll go down 8 feet on a cast.
Yeah.
So that's it gets down there. Well, and then now we have the new 10-inch jerk bait that it came out with this year.
Right, yeah, that's
so that has the weight kit in it, so we can now cast out, count it down, and then start bringing it in. So if you're out, I usually count to about it seems like the 10 count is a good number for us. If you're out in 14 to, 20 feet of water, count it down to 10 and then start jerking it in is getting down in the range where they're at.
Yeah, just willing to hit that outside edge. And so, with that, well, let me look here. Yeah, we got the Rustler. That's a pretty pretty small body there. 9 inches, 2 ounces. 9 inches and 2 ounces. Yeah, that'll get down there.
And it comes in a moose.
Huh?
It also comes in a moose hair option.
Moose.
Yeah, it has an Indiana blade on it.
Very unique.
Yeah. Not a lot of hair, so it gets down a little bit deeper because it's not a huge mop.
Yeah.
So that helps.
Did you kill the moose yourself?
Yeah. The Rustler, and then I made another one called the Hustler.
He didn't answer. Yeah. Did you kill the moose, Jake?
Yeah.
It's directly from a Jake killed moose. I think that.
Yeah.
What do you say? You got the Rustler and the Hustler?
No, I was just teasing about the Hustler. Oh. We haven't made a Hustler, but maybe we'll see.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, I don't recommend it because for years I ran a Hustler trailer and everybody had a comment to make about that. It just said Hustler the side of it real big. It's like, I think Jay said, is that the Larry Flint edition trailer or something like that? It was.
Did I?
Yeah, you did. It's the only funny thing you've ever said. Other than that, so we're talking the midsummer there. What's it look like fall?
Mostly jerk baits for me, except if you're in September when we have that really green water.
Mm-hmm.
I find our jointed baits during that time are better than jerk baits, although I still work them like jerk baits. I know I'm being repetitive here, but during the green water period in September, the jerking the jointed baits makes a lot more vibration than like a regular jerk bait that doesn't make that much noise really. So that helps. And then once we get in October, a lot of jerk baits. Pretty much all I throw is jerk baits, and then pulling suckers around is always a staple.
Is that when you're kicking off sucker season, you think? October?
Earlier? I start in September. Depending on the temperature. It's under 65 degrees is usually when I'll start pulling suckers, and start with small ones. They don't live real long at first, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, some people don't like the sucker fishing, but I think it's a lot of fun.
You're casting in conjunction with your suckers, right? Of course.
Yeah. My clients are casting. I'm pulling suckers. So I'm doing all the fun work.
Yeah, you're just getting it. Well, by September, you're sick of throwing musky baits. You know, you get to sit there and drink your coffee and watch the sucker there.
It's not too bad.
No, it's not. When it comes to that, so you're saying sub 65. What kind of placement? So pick you apart here. Say it's 60 degree water, right? Where are we placing that sucker in the water column generally?
It depends. I usually run two of them, but in the early part of the season, I only run one on. Just because they die and they don't last for long.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'll run it on a float then with a bobber float, and then I can adjust the depth. And sometimes I maybe have it all the way where it's not even any line. The bobber's, a slip bobber, so it slid all the way right to the wire of the quick set rig. I mean, it's that shallow sometimes, and I've seen it multiple times. It's really fun when you see one coming and smashes it right. You get to actually see it happen. Scales are flying. That's pretty cool.
You better not have the drag crank down right there.
They're free spool, but that's a lot of fun, and it can be any depth from 2 feet, I'm talking about, all the way till 20, 30, 25 feet sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I try not to go beyond that. I mean, you don't want to pull them up from 40 or 50 feet or something like that. But,
right.
But there's times when you run suckers as deep as 30, though, huh?
Yeah, I guess. Maybe not that I'm all the way on the bottom. You know, the boat's in 30, maybe.
Okay.
And late. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about November. And,
yeah, yeah.
You know, then that's more like November's kind of stuff.
Well,
and Cisco Byte stuff is going on.
And to that point, I mean, you look at that later. I mean, without going down that rabbit hole, but later in the year, it's not as impactful as, like, if you pull one from 30 feet in August, that's a way different. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Setting it at 20. I mean, he's not going to freak out because he went from 40 degrees to 48. Right? It's a little bit different of a ball game. So
yeah, I never had one get like the bends or, you know, any, you know, air in it from that
barotrauma. Yeah.
I have had it on a trolling fish once where my bait wasn't, I wasn't near the bottom, but the fish must have blasted up from the bottom, and
mm-hmm.
we had that once. It did go down, but it was I have seen it. So, but I never have on a you know, sucker at 25 feet.
Mm-mm. That was a thing. I mean, that was a thing there for a minute where, you know, guys were carrying around hypodermic needles because they're going to do some swim bladder relief on the boat. Remember that era, right?
Yeah, like, oh, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Come on. Let's not do that.
I don't know about that.
We're not. That's playing God a little bit. I mean, but I, you know, I've ran into a couple where they're just kind of doing that roll. And it's funny you say that because it's trolling as well. And I don't know if they ran up from great depths or something like that, but it's just like, okay, give them long enough, they're gonna burp it out, you know, because
what happened with the one.
Yeah, they're sitting there and you get air bubbles come out of them. You're like, okay, it looks like he just chugged a Dr. Pepper there. He just needed to burp a little bit. I'm gonna leave this syringe at home. I'm not gonna sit there and play doctor on him, but one thing I was going to ask you about, and just picking the Smitty brain here, one bait that it's in Next Level Musky Fishing, it's in the book, and then I'm finishing up the next book, and I talk about it, is the Smitty Deep, right? Which is
go ahead.
No, I was going to say I call it Shovel Bill, and I'm looking for it. Smitty Large Troller. There we go.
Oh, the troller. Yeah.
That is, and it's funny. I believe, if I recall correctly, Dr. Bob had a pretty good run this fall on these as well.
They're really good because you can. They may go 30 feet deep, but we usually shorten it up where you're
mm-hmm.
following contours trolling, and your bait is like almost right under the boat, but it's 20 feet down, and it's. Your line is like going straight down pretty much, and you can steer your boat and follow the contour like you would feel. You're right on the contour. The bait isn't 100 feet behind you, and you can't follow anything with doing it like that.
That's why I swear by it. That's, you're nailing it, because, you know, kind of my thing with trolling is my lure selection is made by boat. You know, obviously we want our target depth, and we need to have good boat control, just like you're saying. And when you have 150 feet of line out there, you know, you're going to wreck your boat or hit other stuff trying to turn and contour that point or contour that structure, you know, 150 feet. But, you know, I know there's a handful of guys that know about these, but I mean, that's truly, in my opinion, there's very few genuinely deep trolling baits, you know, where it hits that. And what's the max depth on that? Have you ever played with that? Cause I'm usually going like 20.
They'll go 30. And then I've used the Mono line and I've had them. I mean, I've hit 40 with them.
Oh,
with the Mono.
Yeah. That's ridiculous.
They'll really, but that's pushing it. I just wanted to see what it would do.
Right, well, as a bait maker, you're always checking.
But we got a 48 and a half on that, on a lake that was 200 acres trolling.
Yeah.
That wasn't last year. That was the year before. So that was pretty cool. They work and bang rocks with that metal lip.
Yeah.
They're a good bait.
That's the one thing is, like, you know, probably, and again, love what you guys do. The, as far as Smitty stuff that I throw, you know, regular basis, it's kind of both ends of the spectrum. It's like, I have a handful of wizard spells, but I swear by that large troller. You know, those are kind of like and that's, I think, probably the big, you know, your product line way better than I do. That's probably one of the biggest sleepers in your product line, I bet.
We don't sell very many of them a year, but
well,
the guys that have them know what they are.
Yeah. Be quiet. Don't tell anybody. Just hit delete on the podcast. That's kind of the one in my, you know, in my repertoire where
it's a cool bait.
It's a cool bait. And I think what's missed on that is, and this is just like, okay, I've got two kind of applications for it that I do regularly, you know. Jake, you know how it is. We've got tons of ideas, and then here's what we do on the boat regularly, right? Fall bite, I will take that thing, and exactly like you said, it's hilarious because you'll be down 15 with 20 feet of line, crap like that, right? So you've got really good control. Is that bait is phenomenal for making continued contact because, again, that lip, just the way it's designed, everything's protected. You know, it's pretty dang snag-free unless you hit it and aggressively troll that into rocks. Just bang, and then throttle back. And, I mean, just with it being a wood bait, it has a really fast float back, which is, at least the ones that I've been running, it's funny because it basically rises like one of your jerk baits. I mean,
it rises pretty fast.
It's like
fairly buoyant for a bait that can get that deep. It's pretty buoyant.
Well, and
it's got a real tight wiggle too.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tight
and it's highly tunable. And with that lip, you can tune it too. So I mean, especially if you're trolling, you could tune that thing to kind of go outward.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
you could like enhance the wandering of it because it'll start going out and then all of a sudden it'll just shoot in and start over again.
Now, do you ever been
with just a little tune? Huh? You can really mess around with that thing with that lip. I guess people can't see it. It's got a huge flat metal lip, like rectangular. I guess is the best way to describe it, Jake, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Rectangular lip on the front of it.
It's funny what it is. That's scrap from stealing catalytic converters, Jay.
Is it really?
Yeah, that it literally.
Watch your boat landing.
The Smitties are about. If your truck sounds a little loud, the Smitties are. You look up under your truck and the catalytic converter's gone, but there's just a tracer tail. But
that and stop signs work really good.
Stop signs. Just freaking all kinds of wrecks in the Northwoods. I'm sorry, guys. We had to make some bait, eh?
Plus, you've got that one. You've got the paint job on it like a Monster Energy can. Everybody likes that one.
There you go.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. That's cool.
That's kind of a sleeper. I mean, I don't know if it's intentional. It wasn't done intentionally, but I kind of got some dings on the lip, Jake, where it's like they bent in, like just hard. I'm talking hard corner contacts. And then I ended up taking some vice grips and did it on the other side, which you can get a little, you can change the action on that if you're willing to bend on the lip, which is cool. Like you said, the tunable nature of that. And again, don't buy one because I don't want other people fishing them. I just want to brag about using them.
if you need to tune it, I'd recommend turning the screw eye rather than starting to bend on the lip. But I mean, you could bend on the lip.
I didn't mean tuning it to straighten it. I'm saying like I got one that like the corner was bent, right, from really hard contact. I bent the other side and I was like, okay, this is the one. Right, this is it just kind of, you know, basically saying don't be afraid of the contact. When you're saying that is worse, you know, and I'm sure that's the bane of your existence because you guys are handmade baits and there's not a, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you guys sell at a large scale. It's not like you're just doing the shows. Why don't you go talk to explain to people like they're 2 years old tuning wooden baits, because that is something that's probably super common to you that is a lost art, because I can't think of the last time that I really had to do that, because most with the manufacturing right now. Walk us through it. How are you tuning baits?
So if it's a trolling bait, then I just flip it out behind the boat and just look at it, you know, obviously with the boat moving, and just see if it's running straight before I let any more line out. And if it's running straight, then continue to let more line out. But if it's not, then I'll bring it back in. And if, let's say it's running, if it's on the port side of the boat and it's running further out, you know, then you turn the screw eye toward the right. If you're looking at the bait, if you're looking at the bait and it's going to the right, turn the screw eye to the right, even just a little bit. And usually that will make it's opposite of what you think. You think, oh, you turn it to the left, but actually turn it a little to the right, and then that will make it straighten out. And sometimes you got to play around with it a couple times just to get it perfect. Mm-hmm. And usually it's good to go after that. They don't really, you know, need any more tuning until maybe you bang another rock or, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you might need to tune it again, but usually they're pretty good. And then that gets them going.
Yeah. It's funny. We spent, you know, our whole childhood fishing, and we had to do that with everything. And now if you think about it, most guys don't have to do it much, you know, it's kind of a different era now. And
yeah, I tune all my baits if I'm going to troll them. Mm-hmm. And usually casting, like our little baits, they don't require as much tuning. They're pretty good right out of the box, but the mm-hmm. bigger baits, like with that huge lip, that it's a little more finicky when you have that big of a lip on it.
And I think too, though, I mean, after you put a fish in the net too, it's worth looking at though, you know, a lot of time, you know, and whether it be a tracer tail or whether it be any wooden bait, you know, not much less inspect things, you want to make sure everything's trued up and everything's going, you know, everything's kosher. But go ahead.
They get bent in the net, mm-hmm. and it's not from the fish. It's from the flopping around in the net. Usually, is when something happens.
Yeah, just sit there and tune it back up. And one thing too. I mean, making sure, especially after a fish is in the net, your hook hangers, right, are straight on the bottom. You know, that's one thing to look at. That's heck. I'm saying that, and that's. I'm just going to bitch for a second. I think half the time, if you look at mass production baits, there's problems with that, though, too. Like,
I'm sure.
Y'all have guys going to look at that, and you go, the only problem is, like, with a plastic bait, you can't kind of wrench on them like you would a wooden bait and straighten them out, right? But you have to, you need to look at all your baits, period. Because, like, I'm sure you've had it, Jake, and I mentioned this because, you know, as guys that make baits here, how many times you've had somebody go, well, this is happening. And you just go tune the bait. That's all you got. Right. You know, magically the small adjustment will kind of get you there, you know? So,
yeah, it doesn't take a lot. And then, I mean, some guys get a little bit of glue out and you can, you know, put it on there if you're really that worried about it, but I mean, you don't have to, but that if you really want to lock it in, you can do that Gorilla, you know, what's the fast drying stuff like they use on rubber baits? I can't think of it right now, but something like that.
I use super glue from the Dollar General.
Super glue, that's what I'm talking about.
I'm not going to lie there. So, I you say that, and I've seen guys do that, which is like, don't lock a bait up to the point you can't retune it though. You know, I've seen, I know what you're saying. And it's like, if you're going to catch a fish on a handmade wooden bait, you're just going to have to learn how to tune them. Although, like you said, on the smaller jerk baits and stuff, man, I kind of run those. I just let them, I want them to do weird crap. It's like with the tracer tail and all that, like the weirder, the better.
You want them to do that. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Just get, what drives me nuts on jerk baits, I'll have guys be like, ugh. I'll pump it. It'll go like three times to the left and then it'll come to center. I'm like, good.
Right? Yeah, well, that's the thing though. You got a good one there.
Yeah. Can I have that back? Yeah.
I mean, I fished with Jake a few years ago and I remember we were both kind of up front on the boat and he goes, check this one out, Jay. I'm like, what? And he pulls out a 6-inch Smitty jerk. Remember that? And it was all it was like your favorite. It used to be a perch color or something. It was all
the red horse one. That's my
red horse. That's your baby.
Money on that one. Yeah.
And it's all beat up. It's just, you know, multiple muskies. You know, the paint's all. It's got hook rash and everything. And it's just like, you know, then you flipped it out and it's like, you know, it's dinging everywhere and it's kind of erratic. And, you know, I imagine you do that with clients. You know, it's like, okay, here, this is a small jerkbait. This is what they do. Check this out, you know.
I had to retire that one that was so chewed up and the tail was starting to get kind of skinny, like it could break off almost.
I think
I caught like 30 muskies on that bait or something.
That's cool. Were you sawing through it with the hooks or something?
Oh, I was sawing right through the wood, yeah. Yeah.
That's when you know you fished a bunch as you go. Yeah. There's nothing.
That one's on the wall. That one's tired.
That one's on the wall. You get a plastic bait and you go, this thing's sinking. Oh, crap. It's worn in. There's a hole now. It's not even hookware. Yeah. It's a hole. Yeah. But I think that's kind of because, Jake, you know, you've born and raised in it, right? You're like Bane. He was born in it, molded by it.
Third generation starting now too, and he's making a little popper chugger bait. Charlie's chugger. Yeah, he's made 75 of them. He's making a little pocket money with that.
Jake will be at the Muskie Shop Bash, I believe, this year. The fam dam. If you don't buy a Charlie's Chugger from their child, you're scum.
Oh, we could maybe bring some there. That'd be fun.
I'll buy one just out of freaking. Yeah. That's too funny.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
That's neat. But, you know, you've been around this and you've seen it so long and you know, to the point we're saying about the erratic nature of things, of like now baits are, I'm throwing air quotes, better, right? Because you get that consistency, but there's some baits like you get that magic out of them or that erratic. I mean, how important is that when you have that hyper erratic, you know, it's not gliding left to right. Like, cause I'm thinking like reef hogs back in the day or like your Mercer Creek or some of these baits where you have that magic bait that kind of does something funky, you know, how impactful can that be?
That's what I want. I want it to be erratic. And that's like all of our jerk baits, you know, even the new one, the 10 inch, it's not as erratic as the little, it seems the little baits are, you know, the little 6 inch one, that thing jumps around so much. It's up, it's down, it's left, it's right. It's those are so wild in the water, and it just seems to trigger them. His tracer jerk too, with a little tracer jerk, is the same.
Just
keep. And you got to work it though, like you know, small little short jerks, and letting it, when you see it turn, then you give it a quick jerk back the other way. You can get it to jump, you know, the other direction. You got to work them. It's watching the bait and working the bait. Just, you know, jerking it and not, you know, even caring what it's doing.
Yeah, I agree.
I've been accused of mindlessly jerking it, Jay. Not going to lie. you get locked in, boys. You get locked in. Like you're saying there, is responding to the bait. And, you know, I think there's a positive that with, you know, kind of more mass stuff where you fix big problems. Because back in the day is like, you know, Jay and I have picked on reef hogs a ton of the time. You would have, like, you know, a bunch of real bad ones, and then you get one magic one. I think that's the cool thing with Smitty, because you spend so much time building them. They're all good. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And you're testing and all that, where there's merit there. And I guess what I'm trying to get people to realize is there is a time and a place to embrace the non-perfect running nature of things, because that is, it, you know, it has to have that at times where you know, where it can't be like the perfect pull pause, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like with cranks, you see that? Am I making sense there? Where it's like our crankbaits are so good sometimes, where it's like, it's just too stable. It's just, you just need that little extra oomph, if you will.
And that's why on the tracer jerks, if you look at them, all the backs are bright on the tracers, because I wanted to be able to see them. I didn't forget to paint the back black on those baits. I I wanted to be able to see the bait so I can work it and make it erratic when I bring it in, not, you know, not like a glide bait where it's doing the same exact thing. And those, I mean, do work at times, obviously, but the jerk bait seems, and the nice thing about that is I can give it to a client and maybe they do a struggle with a glide bait, getting it to, you know, do what it's supposed to do. But, you know, the back and forth motion of the glide, walk the dog glide bait, but
right.
The little jerk bait you can give to a kid and he can work it, and you can't really work it wrong. You just jerk it.
Move it through the water. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all. Just don't straight retrieve it. It's not a blade. But, well, you know, well, Jake, we appreciate you coming on. He's always been a friend of the podcast here.
Good being on again. Thanks for having me.
Well, I've been busy just like you have. Life's, it's tough, isn't it? It's like you're on the water every day. You're making baits and you're like, ah.
I think I've been busier in the winter than I am in the summer because going to shows and then, I got to come back and I made 300 some baits this week and painting them and getting them ready. And I'm leaving again. We're going, Madison show is coming up. That's a general fishing show. So we're headed down there on Thursday to do that one. So,
is that this weekend?
Yeah, that's in Madison. We'll be down there.
Very cool. And what is it? So you got Madison. What's the next one? Is it Minnesota?
Minnesota is the same weekend. There's like three shows. If you're on, I think there's Pennsylvania going on this weekend and Minnesota. We're not going to head out there. We're going to go down to Madison. So we used to always do well down there. And
absolutely.
You know, a lot of musky guys down there. There's a couple clubs that come to the show. So that's always cool. A good one for us. And then we're going up into Michigan. We're going to try this one day show up there. I think that's March 7th. We're going to be up in at the casino up there, so I won't be gambling my profits away.
You'll have a good time. Come buy some bait so Jake can pay his bookie off.
I'm not a gambler. I only gamble on fishing.
I hear you. That's the truth. Well, yeah. Jake, thanks for coming on, folks. Jaybird, say good night.
Thanks, Jake. Thank you, everybody.
All right, guys. Catch you next week.
Bye.
All
right.
Later.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Making musky stocking president. Ella's gonna rebuild the chain. Elma's gonna make minimum like 52. Elma's gonna make all of your dreams come true. Elma's gonna keep skis right here under his wing. She's gonna thrive starting in the spring. Elma's gonna keep muskies cozy and warm.